It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is indeed beginning to cloud up a bit. We have made it up to 50 degrees. Out at the airport, they have east winds at 5 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility, and 61% humidity. The Weather Service is calling for these mostly sunny skies to become showery after 4 p.m. Look for showers. South winds to 10 today. Showers tonight too, at least until 4 a.m. or so. Then a chance of rain after that. Southeast winds to 20 overnight with a low of 47. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain in the morning, then scattered showers, and then partly sunny skies. Partly sunny skies on Thursday and Friday too. Coming up on the Midday Report, proxy moose hunting. Quilters in Petersburg get philosophical. And salmon streams.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden is urging other world leaders attending the UN General Assembly this week in New York to stand united against Russian aggression in Ukraine. With more on President Biden's speech earlier today, here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
President Biden said Russia is counting on the world to grow weary. But he asked if nations abandon the core principles of the UN Charter to appease an aggressor like Russia, can any member nation feel protected?
If you allow Ukraine to be carved up, is the independence of any nation secure? I'd respectfully suggest the answer is no.
The White House is asking Congress for another $24 billion in military and economic support for Ukraine. But some Republicans are balking. Tamara Keith, NPR News, New York.
A military airfield in Virginia plays host to an emotional homecoming. Several Americans who spent years as Iran's prisoners were reunited with loved ones at Fort Belvoir early this morning. Families and friends raced to them and embraced them. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the focus now is on the health of each former prisoner.
The initial reports we have are relatively good health, but we want to make sure that they get all the care that they need, and they'll have access to that care for as long as they need it.
The five Americans, two of whom are opting to keep their identities private, were released as part of a prisoner exchange with Iran. The U.S. also agreed to release $6 billion in Iranian funds on the condition the money be used only for humanitarian reasons. Some Republican critics argue the U.S.-Iran deal could incentivize U.S. adversaries to kidnap more Americans. India is accusing Canada of interfering in its internal affairs and has expelled a top Canadian diplomat. The decision was announced one day after Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said his country was investigating allegations that India played a role in the death of Sikh independence advocate Hardeep Singh Nijjar, who was killed in Canada in June. The U.S. House Oversight Committee will hold its first impeachment hearing for President Joe Biden next Thursday. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports on the focus on President's family.
Oversight Chairman James Comer will chair the first public impeachment hearing on September 28th. The session will examine constitutional and legal questions around the GOP-led panel's allegations that the president engaged in, quote, corruption and abuse of public office, according to a committee spokesperson. Comer is expected to subpoena personal and bank records from Hunter Biden, the president's son, and James Biden, the president's brother, as soon as this week. White House spokesman Ian Sam says the hearing is a way for House Republicans to distract from their own, quote, chaotic inability to govern. It will play out 2 days before Congress needs to pass a funding bill to avoid a government shutdown. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, The Capitol.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Thanks to what is known as proxy hunting, being elderly or disabled doesn't mean having to sit out the moose harvest in Alaska. In Bethel, this is especially true thanks in large part to a long-running moose hunt program run by the Tribal Organization for the City. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
Just as the frenzied salmon fishing season winds down on the Kuskokwim River, the time comes to hunt moose. The state of Alaska has a program in place to help those who can't take part in the labor-intensive moose harvest, allowing someone to hunt on their behalf as a proxy. ONC, the tribal organization for Bethel, has been helping match elders and the disabled with willing hunters for more than three decades.
This is the biggest moose program we've had.
That's ONC's Director of Natural Resources, Alyssa Rogers.
We started off with just a couple people, and today we actually have roughly about 100 proxies and about 20 hunters so far.
Proxy hunters can be as young as 10 years old and must agree to personally deliver all salvageable parts of the animal to their recipients within 30 days of harvesting. They must also immediately destroy the antlers of bull moose. No trophies, says the state. The window for taking moose in the management zone where Bethel lies was just 8 days this year. According to Natural Resources technician Cara Dominic, ONC was able to facilitate successful proxy hunts for five bull moose before hunting closed on September 8th.
We had a couple hunters who came back halfway through the season saying that they were successful for their families. They caught their own moose and they wanted to go out again. They picked up a proxy and went out for our elders.
Proxy hunting is an opportunity for hunters to spend more time out on the tundra practicing subsistence while bringing high-quality protein to recipients that can offset soaring supermarket prices in Bethel. Serving as a proxy hunter can also be a chance to make a personal connection, aligned with cultural tradition.
Most of our hunters this season were able to bring the moose directly to their recipients, so they got to meet who they were hunting for. And some of the recipients are single, elderly women, and they don't necessarily need a whole moose, so sometimes they'll be able to drop off different parts of the moose to multiple elders.
Grace Kugler recently came to Bethel through the Jesuit Volunteer Corps to also serve as a natural resources technician at ONC. Her first month away from home has been spent getting hands-on with the proxy moose hunt program alongside Rogers and Dominic.
Something that we've talked about just amongst ourselves that we would like to send out appreciation for is like people who have come from other villages outside of Bethel to come hunt for people who live in Bethel. I mean, that's just like, you know, so generous of them, and we really deeply appreciate that.
The ONC proxy moose hunt team said that regionally the hard work has only started, given that the winter moose hunt on the lower Yukon River is far less restricted.
It's also easier for hunters because there's more accessibility. If you happen to catch one in the trees, you don't need to, you know, walk through a marsh and, you know, to carry it out. You can drive right up to it, and it's easier to see through the brush.
Given the opportunities to harvest moose in western Alaska throughout the winter, ONC is ready and willing to help get as many people involved as possible.
Even if you're at the store and you're like, I heard about your program, we would like to be signed up, we can sign you up right there.
When it comes to bringing moose to those in need, Rogers described becoming a proxy hunter as something that can be the icing on the cake for those already out practicing subsistence harvesting or simply enjoying the outdoors. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Since 2021, the Kenai Watershed Forum has visited more than 50 streams and lakes throughout the central Kenai Peninsula to determine where anadromous fish, such as salmon, can be found. The initiative aims to increase the amounts of streams and rivers protected under the Alaska Fish and Game's Anadromous Waters Catalog. KDLL's Hunter Morrison joined the nonprofit for a day of field work and has this story.
No, Fern, this way. Come on, let's go. Come here, wet doggy. Fern, let's go.
On a drizzly morning, two environmental scientists in chest waders trek into the woods with backpacks full of minnow traps, salmon eggs, and other equipment. With their dogs Sarah and Fern along for the ride, they're interested in finding out if West Mackay Lake, just outside of Soldotna, harbors juvenile salmon.
They're often places that, you know, we drive past every day, but they don't necessarily look like salmon habitat.
That's Ben Meyer, environmental scientist at the Kenai Watershed Forum, who led the day's fieldwork. According to Meyer, deciding where to look is one of the most challenging aspects of the project. The nonprofit looks at maps of flowing water and overlays them with the Anadromous Waters Catalog to determine which bodies of water have not been identified.
Seems like as good a place as any. So if I were a fish, I'd probably be, swimming upstream to see what lives here, so we'll see what lives here.
Reaching the lake's edge, the team unloads their gear and begins to set traps. To attract juvenile salmon, they place infertile salmon eggs within the traps. Alexa Millward assists in setting the traps. She's the Kenai Peninsula Engagement Coordinator for Trout Unlimited Alaska.
It's important to provide this extra protection for these streams. Right now, these streams are not documented as anadromous, and so by us surveying and providing evidence that there are baby salmon out here, that helps obtain more protection for these waters.
After jotting down field notes and snapping a few photographs, the team takes a look at a map and decides to venture off to a nearby pond that has not yet been surveyed.
To me, it kind of looks like there is a stream flowing from this pond to there. So I want to see if there's like an outflow from that pond into this lake.
They'll return to the lake later in the day to see if any young salmon have been caught. Trudging through thick vegetation within a shallow stream, the team deploys more traps at the pond's outer limit before eating a quick lunch and taking notes. After about 20 minutes, they investigate the traps and release what was caught.
Okay, we got some little fishies in here, so I'm just taking a peek at them. These guys are all stickleback, I'm pretty sure. So those are not juvenile salmon.
About an hour after setting the first traps of the day, the scientists return to West Mackay Lake, but again find only stickleback. Meyer comes back the following day with two volunteers, a mother and her 7-year-old daughter, and finds 4 juvenile coho.
That was my really first time catching those baby salmon.
That's Lila Anderson, a first-time volunteer. She is joined by her mother, Sarah.
Going back to the watershed forum and seeing the map of all of the creeks and streams and ponds of where there actually is salmon and like how far they have to travel to get back out to the ocean, it's amazing. There's probably more salmon than we even know in most of the lakes and streams that haven't been studied yet.
I find this kind of work fascinating because it often gives people a new perspective on something that maybe they've driven past thousands of times or would never have expected to see a salmon habitat until we show what's there.
Again, Ben Meyer.
It's a way of getting people to participate in learning about what's right under their feet or what's right out their back door that they might not have known was there or been able to appreciate.
Not far from the two bodies of water that were surveyed lies a stream that was unintentionally disturbed by a local developer. Later added to the Anadromous Waters Catalog, surveying undocumented streams, lakes, and rivers is crucial to protecting the salmon population on the peninsula. With the help of volunteers, the Kenai Watershed Forum has documented over 15 miles of previously unknown salmon streams, all within a 30-minute drive of the nonprofit Soldotna office. Funding for this project is provided by the Alaska Sustainable Salmon Fund. In Soldotna, I'm Hunter Morrison.
A group of sailors from Estonia anchored near Kotzebue last week. The Estonians were excited to visit because of an historic connection between their small country and the Northwest Arctic. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen talked to the sailors about their epic journey through the Northwest Passage on a sailboat.
It's been almost 3 months since about a dozen adventurers from the small Baltic nation of Estonia left their country's capital, bound for the Arctic. Their goal was to travel by sailboat through the Northwest Passage, a sea lane that passes from the Atlantic to Pacific Ocean through the Greenlandic, Canadian, and Alaskan Arctic. Teet Bruley is the expedition leader.
First of all, sailing is so romantic. That's the reason why I'm sailing.
He smiles at his wife, Maurice, who's the ship's boatswain, in charge of the maintenance and deck crew. Their ship is named the Admiral Bellingshausen, after the Estonian-born explorer who first discovered Antarctica. In 2019, the group sailed the vessel from Estonia on a six-month voyage to Antarctica. Mari says the crew is inspired by another Antarctic explorer who made their same Arctic journey.
We have one polar idol, Roald Amundsen, who was the first to pass Northwest Passage in 1903-1906.
Since Amundsen's expedition over a century ago, it's estimated that about 350 boats have made the Northwest Passage trip, and only about half have traveled, like Amundsen and the Estonians, using sails. Maurice says it's the first time an Estonian ship has completed the endeavor, a trip of nearly 8,000 nautical miles from their capital city, Tallinn.
So we are pretty proud of that.
The crew was excited to visit Kotzebue because of a historic connection to Estonia. Several place names familiar to residents of the Northwest Arctic, including Kotzebue, Cape Krusenstern, and Cape Espenberg, all bear the names of scientists and explorers from present-day Estonia, though at the time they would have considered themselves Baltic Germans. All were part of Russia's first circumnavigation of the globe in the mid-1800s.
Kotzebue and other Baltic German scientists and explorers are really honored in Estonia. They are part of our culture, Estonian culture. We know very well what they did, and we are proud of them.
Martin Vikma is one of the owners of the boat. He chimes in.
Yeah, we actually have in our capital city, Tallinn, we have a Kotzebue street, and one of our crew members actually live on that street.
The Admiral Bellingshausen, the Estonian's boat, is a modern vessel in comparison to the giant three-mast sloops the Baltic German explorers of the 1800s would have sailed in. Their converted yacht is about 75 feet long and 20 feet wide, equipped with a 400-horsepower diesel motor. The Admiral Bellingshausen has modern navigational tools, satellite internet, and a radio transmitter that is able to broadcast regularly to Estonia. Its 12-member crew has thousands of fans in their country of about 1 million people.
And we find it quite important to take the message as many followers as possible.
Maurice's husband, Tiet, says one of the messages is something they have encountered throughout their three-month journey: the fragility and rapid change affecting the Arctic.
If in Europe we are talking about climate change, it's a theoretical thing for us. But here we can see it's a real everyday life. That is also a very important part of our trip, this knowledge, and we try to pass this knowledge over to our audience in Estonia also.
But Mari says she sees a lot of hope too.
And in spite of climate change and all kind of problems, we have seen bright-eyed youngsters who say that we have to save our language, we have to save our culture, and we see future, which has been one of the most beautiful parts as for seeing people on the way here.
The Admiral Bellingshausen planned to sail from Kotzebue to Little Diomede Island, Nome, and the Aleutians before heading to Seattle for the winter. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
A group of women in Petersburg have been getting together to quilt for nearly four decades. This past weekend, they brought back a beloved member of their group to teach some classes in Petersburg. That reunion led to reflections on the way that quilting can stretch brains, build community, and heal. KFSK's Hannah Floor has the story.
We have a big bullseye in the middle.
I don't like that.
I don't like that either. So we
and I kind of like this.
We're in the Holy Cross House of the Petersburg Lutheran Church, a high-ceilinged room with skylights. Unfinished quilts cover the walls. Squares stuck to fuzzy fabric so that quilters can play with their designs.
Right, I'd like that one too. Yeah. But this doesn't do anything.
I don't like
anything.
That at all. No. Oh, that's awful.
I love it, Chris.
Chris Kissinger can't decide what her final quilt should look like. She's been quilting for about 40 years and is used to knowing where she's going with the project. But this is improv quilting.
We're just going to change it, Chris. We're not going to throw it away.
With traditional quilting, the design is established before you start. With improv quilting, the design is built as you go. Melissa Caraway is teaching the class. She She says that since the process is so different from traditional quilting, it can be kind of scary for some people.
But once you get the hang of it, it's very freeing.
Carraway lived and quilted in Petersburg for decades. Now she comes back every year to teach classes. Those classes are put on by Petersburg's Rain Country Quilters. Years ago, the group organized into a guild and set some goals for themselves. They wanted to support the craft of quilting, to encourage one another, and to engage in community service. One of the ways they fulfill the community service part of their mission is by participating in the nationwide Quilts of Valor program. Each year, they sew patriotic quilts for veterans in Petersburg, which they present during a Veterans Day ceremony. A few years ago, they started including high school students in the project. During the school's annual day of service, the group sets up a classroom and teaches students to sew. Rain Country quilter Sue Flint worked with a student who was making a quilt for her grandpa.
Well, he was a veteran. He didn't live in Petersburg, but they just took it down south to him, and it's an emotional thing.
Bringing quilting to high school students and others is part of the mission of the Rain Country Quilters. Flint says the group would love to help younger folks discover the craft.
Our youngest member has kids in college right now. We're mostly pretty gray-haired. We have one high school student taking a class on Saturday, and we're excited about that.
Carraway and Flint urge those who are curious not to be intimidated by the size of a full quilt. They say smaller projects like placemats or table runners are a good place to start.
Baby quilts are a great idea.
Right.
Yeah.
They're small. They're less intimidating.
Right.
Babies don't care. They just like them. That's
right. Carraway says quilting is a way to connect with others in the community.
The sharing with other people, people that you didn't normally come in contact with on a daily basis, but you shared a common interest. And so it gave you much more of a feeling of belonging, which is important to everyone, I think.
She says lots of her students and customers joke that quilting is cheaper than therapy.
You do get to reflect on things and people that you care about when you're sewing. So it's a very healing process for me and for many others, I think.
That's kind of neat, because look. Right, see, and I like the way this goes.
Chris Kissinger still hasn't settled on a final configuration for her quilt, but she says she really likes improv quilting, and that surprised her.
I'll do it again. Yep.
Yeah, it was good. It's good for old brains to learn new things. So, yeah.
Members of the Rain Country Quilters plan to continue organizing yearly classes and learning new ways of doing the time-honored craft. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Floor.
New home construction plummets. I'm Matt Levin with the Marketplace Minute. U.S. housing starts fell to their lowest level since June of 2020, according to census data released today. The drop was largely driven by a decline in new multifamily building as higher interest rates continue to weigh on the housing sector. Disney is doubling down on theme parks. The entertainment giant said today it would invest $60 billion in its parks and cruises division. It's been a revenue bright spot as Disney's streaming business drags. Global economic growth will be slower next year, according to the latest forecast from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The OECD blamed inflation, higher interest rates, and a sluggish Chinese economy. I'm Matt Levin with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Vermont Tourism. Trip ideas and planning tools available at vermontvacation.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 19th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:48. It will set again at 8:17. That will give us 12 hours and 29 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 71 degrees set in 1954, and our record low was 31 set in the year 2000. Currently 50 degrees under fair skies. Out at the airport, they have east winds at 5 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility, and 61% humidity. The Weather Service is calling for these partly sunny skies to become increasingly cloudy, with showers likely after 4 p.m., south winds to 10. Those showers are expected to continue through about 4 a.m., followed by a chance of rain tomorrow morning. Low around 47 overnight with southeast winds to 20. And look for those scattered showers after 10 a.m. tomorrow morning to turn into partly sunny skies with a high near 55 and south winds to 10. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 44, date issued 10 a.m. on September 15th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 19th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, September 19th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st, at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255101. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Iakulik, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, the Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the Northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Izuit Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, and Southwest Fognak sections of the and Northeast Fognak sections of the Fognak District and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest Fognak section of the Fognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of a beach near the stream terminus at Molina Creek, stream number 252105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak Districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour cordophone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanek out to 15 nautical miles. Southwest 15 and seas to 5 feet for today. Southeast 20 tonight with 7-foot seas. And southwest 20 tomorrow with seas to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, south 15 today and 3-foot seas. East 20 tonight with 5-foot seas. And for tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet on our east on our west side. The following are upcoming public meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough. On Tuesday, September 19th, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a special meeting at the Kodiak Island Borough landfill. That's happening at 5 p.m. On Wednesday, September 20th, the Joint Building Code Review Committee will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. On Wednesday, September 20th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, September 21st, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public. For more information, contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310. And also open to the public and going on at 6:30 p.m. tonight, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang and Deputy Commissioner Rachel Baker, who sits on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, they'll be at the Kodiak building tonight with a town hall on bycatch and an update on the Gulf of Alaska Tanner Crab Survey. So that's all happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Kodiak building on Near Island. Everyone is invited. Please attend and share your thoughts with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game leadership on the bycatch of important species like tanner crab, halibut, and salmon. Again, that's 6:30 p.m. at the Kodiak building on Near Island tonight. And the Kodiak Arts Council's annual meeting will be held tomorrow. That's at 6 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. They will be having elections, presentations by staff, board members, and member organizations, and afterward, a chance to socialize with the Balalaika players, Java Flats providing refreshments. And you can meet the new executive director, Molly Miller, and interact with the board members. Again, that's Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.